Bits and Bolts, the podcast about technology, life, philosophy, and anything in between. It is January 18th, 2019. What a wonderful wintry evening as a snowstorm approaches. I'm your host, Muskrat, with guest co-host, Mongoose. This evening's topic, how's it going? This evening's topic, payment card security.
Right.
Interesting topic. Lots of stuff going on with that.
Lots of stuff.
Always fun. And of course, we have the headlines of the evening that we'll be getting to. Word from our sponsor a little bit. And of course, the cocktail of the hour. How's it going, Mongoose?
Good. So your headlines, it's either going to be Trump or it's going to be the Green Bay Packers, right? Because this is Wisconsin. So you got to start with one of those topics, right? Or am I wrong?
I was thinking a little bit different.
Are we cliche? Are we cliche?
Little slant. Not so much on the Packers, especially with this season. I think you're pretty happy about that.
Did you ever notice that when Trump talks, he's got jazz hands?
Actually, yes, I have noticed that. I
think, or maybe chef hands, like chef hands from South Park.
I think he must have been a dancer at one point. You think he has salty chocolate balls?
I don't know.
Interesting. Okay. So it's been an eventful couple of months here. Looking through my headlines.
You went all the way back months.
I don't want to go too old. Don't want to go too stale. However, this one is from 2018, December. Maybe you heard of it. Massive CenturyLink outage.
That was a whole year ago.
That is one way to look at it. You are correct. Yeah, looks like CenturyLink had a bad network card.
That never happens.
Yeah. Well, this network card brought down multiple data centers, and I believe approximately 50 hour outage caused by this network card.
Yeah, a whole region was affected, wasn't it?
Yeah, multiple states. Yeah. So, I'm a network engineer. You're a network engineer.
So
network card causing a multi-state outage. Huh. That's kind of interesting. That's actually quite a feat of network engineering.
It is. It is. For a carrier that size and that well-respected to achieve that feat of incompetence.
Well, some would look at it as incompetence, and others would look at it as creative engineering.
Or excellent poor design.
Correct. The excellence of poorly designed networks. It's a lost art. How about this one? E-cigs are more cancery than we first thought.
That's why they call them douche flutes.
Is it? So here's an idea. You take a plant, tobacco, and causes cancer by smoking mass amounts of it with added tar, etc. And someone gets the bright idea that if they put it into a liquid form with 20 plus other unnamable chemicals, that would somehow be healthier. Huh.
Now, how do they have a broad enough bunch of research for this? I mean, how long have e-cigs been out that I mean, people have not grown up like they did in the 50s and 10, 20, 30, 40 years of smoking cigarettes. Obviously, we know the effects, but, you know, I mean, e-cigs been out for what, 10, 15 years? Like, have they really had that body of evidence to go and make those conclusions to say that these are worse than cigarettes?
Well, I can't tell you whether they're worse or not. Just more cancery than we thought. So the Washington Post points to a new study from Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. Presenting evidence that the vapor from e-cigs contains two chemicals, specifically propylene glycol, which is in a whole host of things, including food, and glycerin, considered probable carcinogens by federal health officials. However, there's also things like formaldehyde and a chemical that is related to something called popcorn lung, which goes back to the microwave popcorn industry. That's right.
That's what Orville Redenbacher had.
It's probably what he died from. Yeah, probably not a good idea to inhale a bunch of chemicals. Just say.
Yeah, so the propylene glycol, they've been saying for years is a problem, but it depends on the type of e-cig or the e-cig juice that you get. So they always caution against the stuff manufactured in China and saying that that's a higher propensity for, you know, the substance. So does it depend on the e-cig? I mean, is there a better type of e-cig to buy or?
Well, that is not in the study that I can
Have they only fed e-cigs from China to mice and they neglected the ones?
That I don't know. But I know that people have told me there are more natural e-cig vapors, supposedly. I haven't looked into it. I do not myself use e-cigarettes. I try to keep things in as much natural form as possible. That's my personal philosophy. But I don't know. Maybe we should follow a bunch of high schoolers that are smoking this stuff and see what happens.
What else you got?
Well, moving on here. Again, this is January 18th, 2019, and it is the 28th day of the federal shutdown. And looks like tomorrow, which will be Saturday, the 19th, our commander-in-chief is looking to make a major announcement about border and shutdown. So that should be interesting.
He'll have the jazz hands going on.
Probably.
What could this big announcement be? He's obviously going to cave to the Democrats and lift the shutdown.
You think so, huh? I don't know about that. Could be. But some think he's going to call a national emergency so that he can build the wall with military funds or something like that. Would not surprise me.
Would he have the balls to do that?
Well, I think you'd have to ask a couple of his mistresses if he's got the balls for that. He might have the mushroom. Don't know if he's got the balls. And the last headline, this one's my personal favorite. Wild monkeys with killer herpes are breeding like crazy in Florida.
Killer to monkeys or killer to everyone?
Humans. The herpes affects the monkeys like herpes affects humans, but when it, like human herpes affects humans, but when this monkey herpes infects humans, it can turn deadly. It's the MCHV1 virus. It can cause flu-like illness that can progress to neurological problems, such as double vision and paralysis. And it's at this point that an infected person is likely to die of the infection.
So what's the transmission vector? Is it having sex with a monkey, or can it be?
I think that probably could transmit it. However, the monkeys will attack. They will bite.
They'll rape people?
That might be happening, too. That might be happening, too. But they will, just bite you or do whatever when you're around.
Yeah, they do that already. Monkeys are always chewing up people's faces.
Yeah, this is in Marion County, Florida. And it's a population of monkeys that live in Silver Spring State Park, Central Florida. And looks like a troop of these monkeys were brought to Central Florida in 1930s as part of a long-since-closed attraction in the park. They were placed on a small island. But it turns out monkeys can swim and not stay there long. So.
I did not know that. Monkeys... as well.
Yes, and someone else must not have known that either, and the monkeys have been breeding and might just overrun Florida. I don't know. I don't know if the water will get them first or the monkeys at this point.
They fooled us all.
They did, but to be honest, it's Florida. So there's wild monkeys with herpes killing people in Florida.
And everybody in Florida is old. I mean, except for Disney World. So as long as you keep the monkeys away from Disney World, maybe this thing will just die off.
So, yeah, I can see Florida having to protect the Disneyland with a gang of armed ex-felons from the rabid monkeys. Or Herpaceous monkeys?
Herpaceous monkeys, yes. That's the grammatically correct terminology, I think. Yeah.
Florida, monkeys with herpes. That's all the headlines for today, January 18th, 2019. Now a quick word from our sponsor.
There's nothing like the sound of bubbling beans boiling next to a babbling brook. Come on down to Baked Beans and Books to get yourself a helping of baked beans while perusing our vast selection of books, all while listening to the sound of the State Street Brook. That's right, at Baked Beans and Books, you'll find what you're looking for and get yourself a heaping handful of baked beans. What more could you ask for? I'm Hank Hurlson, proprietor of Baked Beans and Books. Stop down today to find what you're looking for. Located at 11111 State Street in Madison, Wisconsin. Baked Beans and Books. When books just aren't enough.
And we're back. This is Muskrat and Mongoose.
Mongoose.
Packets and Bolts podcast, January 18th, 2019, maiden voyage. For my cocktail of the evening, I am making what I consider a winter drink, but also in honor of our president, a white Russian. I am mixed one part Kahlua. I'm making mine a double, by the way. Those monkeys really got me freaked out. One part vodka and one part heavy cream. And of course, tonight's vodka, Absolut Vodka. Absolut Vodka, when you want to be absolutely wasted.
Shaken, not stirred?
No, I stirred my white Russian. So to non-collusion? Yep, that's a white Russian, all right. That's the stuff. What about you, Mongoose? Do you have a cocktail of the evening, or are you going dry?
Well, never dry. Never dry, always high with my friend Sam Adams here. Ooh, yes. Just hanging out. Absolutely.
Uncommonly smooth.
Uncommonly smooth beer.
Okay, so, I know this topic is near and dear to your heart.
Pisses me off.
Is it that bad?
Yeah, it does. It's bad. It's very bad.
So I know in the news we're always hearing about credit card breaches, people's information being stolen. And that's really the heart of our discussion tonight. Really, we have, in my opinion, a pretty much wild west of payments and transactions of not just money, but, you know, information and all that flying back and forth between all these companies. And who's really keeping track of it all?
Yeah, well, you'll find as we go through this this report here that there is one fundamental problem here. I mean, there's a few of them, actually, but there is really one great, gigantic, fundamental bullshit problem. So let's talk about payment card security, and I'm going to harp on all those gas stations that have their chip readers duct taped, are marked with Post-it notes written by some retard with a crayon that says, no chip swipe here. You know, it's more like, wipe your ass here with our poor security practices. So how about we start off with some general facts about payment cards to kick this thing off?
Sure, let's go over the facts, just the facts.
All right, according to the CFPB Consumer Credit Card Market Study, there are approximately 160 million credit card holders in the United States. And as of 2017, there were approximately 14.4 billion credit cards in circulation across the globe. Consumers with an average credit score of 620 or more have at least four credit cards, and there are over 500,000 applications for credit cards per day in the United States. It's fucking crazy.
That's a lot of credit cards. 14.4 billion?
Yeah, that's across the globe.
That's okay? Across the globe,
so like,
still.
Yeah, so we're also talking like the Democratic Republic of Congo and all their plastic.
Now, 160 million in the U.S. actually kind of seems a little low to me. That actually surprises me. I would think it'd be a little higher. So, but a little over half the population. And does that count all just credit cards, or is that debit cards as well?
Yeah, well, that's credit cards, all right? But we're going to be talking about credit cards. We're going to be talking about debit cards here. All right, so the thing is, the frequency of online payments is growing. And according to statistics provided by the U.S. Census Bureau, between 2013 and 2017, online payments in the United States have grown four times as much as retail payments. Now, across the globe, the average person makes approximately 19 online transactions using a payment card per calendar year. We're talking globally again, so I assume this includes nomadic huntsmen and sheep-loving shepherds from arid desert regions, too. I don't know. They weren't specific in the report about that, but I know I made more than 19 transactions over the last year. I'm sure you did too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Right?
For sure.
Yeah, well, anyway, 2016 represents the first year where incidents of online fraud surpassed in-person fraud.
Really?
Actually, about 58% of those transactions were the online type of fraud. It's a trend that's going to continue. Consumer confidence is low, and people don't believe their data is safe when making online purchases. According to a Pew Research Center survey, only about 10% of Americans are very confident that the websites they shop at are keeping their credit card information secure. And surprisingly, another study found that 10% of people are morons.
So what are the source of these online frauds? Is this from stolen credit cards from companies, or is it from individual theft of credit cards, or do we have those statistics?
Well, that's where it starts to get interesting. According to the Global News Bureau Quartz, America is responsible for approximately one quarter of the global payment card transaction volume, one quarter, 25%, but accounts for nearly half of all worldwide credit card fraud. And you may say, oh, you know, that's not big a deal, but we're talking major frequency. Like, this is beyond what, you know, you'd say like a standard deviation, okay? Merchants are explicitly warned to consider the ramifications of fraud on their operations when selling in the United States. Now, the global payment gateway and payment management company CyberSource indicates that online merchants report the most effective tools to fight payment card fraud to be AVS and CVV filters. You know what those are, right?
For the numbers that are on the back?
Yeah, that's the CVV. That's the three-digit number on the back of your card. It's a card verification number, and the AVS is the address validation form or whatnot. So the American Express Digital Payments Survey indicates that only 53% of merchants require customers to enter their CVV for credit card validation upon checkout. In addition, only 39% of online merchants actually decline a transaction when the consumer's billing address has not been provided. So you see, these merchants are fucked up.
Well, they just want the cash. They want the scratch.
Yeah, exactly. There's no pressure on them. They don't give a shit about you or me. We see a pattern emerging here, right? Statistically speaking, the theft level of chip card data in the U.S. is 868% higher than the rest of the world. So again, 25% of the world's cards, but 50% of the theft. But really, we're talking 868% higher than the rest of the world.
Now, we all know correlation does not equal causation. So, do we know the reason America is such a target? Are we worse off security-wise, or are we bigger targets because of our wealth?
All right. Back up for a minute, okay? So let's go back a minute. What is EMV, okay? Because I'm going to use that term a lot here. EMV stands for the Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, but it was later branded EMVCo to represent additional members added to our consortium, so EMVCo. These cards were finally made available to U.S. consumers starting around 2015, give or take. EMV provides end-to-end encryption of cardholder data and serves its purpose everywhere but here in the United States. It's really designed to defeat payment card counterfeiting associated with magnetic stripe data. Now, remember that phrase, magnetic stripe data, because this is the crux of the problem, exactly what you're poking at, what you're looking for here. So you should be making the connection by now, everybody. The magnetic stripe readers are the devil. A study reported in May 2018 from the research firm Gemini Advisory found that financial institutions were successful in providing consumers with EMV-compliant credit and debit cards for use. They were mailed out pretty quick, as I recall. You got yours pretty quick, right?
I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as that came out, I had mine in the mail. It had that nice little shiny chip, and it still had that stupid goddamn magnetic stripe.
Well, yeah, they have to, right? Compatibility.
Yeah, the Gemini Advisory found out that EMV technology didn't eradicate card-present fraud whatsoever. In fact, of more than 60 million payment cards stolen in the 12 months prior to the study, chip-enabled cards represented 93% of the total. 75% of these were compromised at point-of-sale machines. The results reflect the lack of U.S. merchant compliance with the EMV implementation. Again, hey, gas stations, no chip, wipe your ass here.
So is that really the issue? Is the chip that much more secure?
Well, first of all, as a side note, you've probably seen the news stories about card skimmers or shimmers at gas pumps in dark, secluded areas, right?
Yeah.
You insert your card and the bad guys capture your data and you're screwed. Technically, the shimmer mechanism is inserted as a man-in-the-middle type of attack between the EMV chip and the ATM or POS chip reader prior to any instance of tokenization. It reads what's called track one and track two data, which is what was associated with the two of the three bands on that magnetic stripe on the old cards. The attacker can clone your data to a magnetic stripe and merely go to some non-compliant store with a stripe reader to buy beer and cigarettes or whatever else they're going to buy. It's the failure of merchants to be fully EMV compliant that results in the theft and loss to your cards.
Okay. So what's the, obviously they have no compulsion, right? No one's making them implement this, right? Where does the payment card industry fall on this?
Well, okay, yeah, so I see what you're saying. And to summarize this so far, we have merchants in card-present settings like gas stations who are dragging their feet about banning the magnetic stripe readers who don't fully implement the full security of EMV, right? Their chip reader breaks and they fall back to a magnetic reader. And then we have card-not-present, or otherwise known as online transactions taking place, where merchants are doing an awfully crummy job of leveraging the address and card verification filters in the manner prescribed. Europe, meanwhile, has GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation Law, which they rolled out in early 2018 against the objection of companies who said they could never modernize their processes to the extent necessary. But most of them did for fear of fines, which would bankrupt small and medium-sized companies. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., there's little to no regulation, and we've become a veritable laughingstock to the rest of the civilized world.
Well, now, wait a minute here. We've got PCI. Payment card industry security standards, I believe, yeah. 2004 is when they were version 1.0 came out.
Now they're on PCI? Version 3 and it's three times as shitty. I mean, you know, these companies like check the compliance box and we're done, you know, and these auditors, it's like they can probably be bribed. I don't know. Meanwhile, the government's doing nothing. There's a large political sentiment in the U.S. about avoiding government regulation, and I'm not going to open up a can of worms with that, but the only ones suffering from this lack of regulation right now are the U.S. citizens like you and me and our listeners. Free markets are doing jack shit. Visa's trying, I guess, but it's really to protect their direct customer base if you think about it. Prior to 2015, credit card issuers were liable for a large majority of counterfeit chargebacks on card-present transactions, so the consortium got together and established a deadline in October 2015 to implement the EMV-compliant POS systems in an effort to move the liability for those chargebacks to the merchants or their payment processors. But here's the thing, there were loopholes, and realistically, this lacks the force of any meaningful government oversight. So here's the thing. If a merchant allows a person to swipe their card, and it turns out to be fraudulent, as long as they have EMV enabled, they're not liable. So the merchant, they just don't give a shit.
So, but who makes up for that? The credit card company pays
the issuers, going back to PCI, it's the same mentality that so many companies have had about security these days. Hey, we need to pass the audit, let's check the box, pass it, and not give a shit about proper security practices thereafter.
Not at all. That is correct. I've often said that we're not going to get any regulation on here unless some major issues happen. So the analogy I always like to give is the, you know, when turn of the last century, not this century, when electricity was the new thing and anyone could call themselves an electrician. And so you had a whole bunch of people wiring houses, and it wasn't until quite a few burned down that they decided to get electrical codes. So until we get to that point, which might never happen because, you know, no one's really dying from credit card theft, right? It's just a bunch of money. And apparently they seem to be all right with this, bleeding, this bleeding from the industry where the banks pay it. I mean, I know the banks print their own money, so they probably really don't care in the grand scheme of things. But everyone seems to be content with the providers picking up the bill for all the fraud that happens. That's in my opinion. And I don't see any political will for any type of strict regulation. And like you said before, PCI is a joke. So I don't see much happening on any of those fronts. And without that happening, without something that says when you want to take credit card payments, this is what you must do, I just don't see anything improving.
Yeah, absolutely not. It's almost like it's the free market mentality. It's like we need to let businesses do whatever or else like we're going to start ruining our economy. But like I said, meanwhile, Europe is doing this and they're getting by fine. And now they've got the force of regulation. EMV chip cards are working out there in Europe. But I digress. So as long as I'm painting a bleak picture, let's talk about what else makes absolutely no sense in regard to retail purchases in the United States. Number one, you can still pay by check in most retailers. Who the hell carries a checkbook with them to the store anymore? I see old ladies once in a while. I used to see old ladies doing, pulling out the checkbook, taking 15 minutes to write a check while I waited there with my groceries, but I don't anymore. I mean, do you? They still accept checks.
I actually haven't seen a place that, most places I go to, I see a sign that says no personal checks.
All right, so at least they're getting there, because, I mean, it's still rampant in some places.
I always wondered how checks were so secure, because your account number and routing number is right on those checks.
Yeah, it's a joke. Number two, if you go to a restaurant, you hand the waitress or waiter your payment card, and they walk away with it. And then they proceed to write down your name, card number, and CVS number behind the kitchen doors. There was a restaurant here locally a couple years ago which ran a massive credit card theft operation, and I doubt the conspirators were ever caught. I had family members and friends get compromised. They had friends who got compromised. Mysterious charges appeared on their card from other states, so they were clearly selling the data for profit. Now, I'd say the name of the restaurant, but we should check. Let's check with our producers here to see if we can. Never mind.
It's we don't want the liability, but. Yeah, the wholesale selling of credit card, usually to Russian oligarchs, seems to be a big thing. But, you know, I don't. What's a credit card go for nowadays? I don't know, 20 cents, 25 cents? I don't know. You have to sell, like, thousands of them to get any sort of. And that's even more funny because the fact that people can make money off massive amounts of credit cards sold is just showing how many credit cards can be grabbed at any single time.
Yeah, there was just another news report about a massive breach that that didn't make our headlines, but it just came out another day or so ago about 75 million credit card numbers again getting dumped. I mean, this is becoming almost every other day. And, you know, if you follow somebody like Brian Krebs, the security reporter, Krebs on Security, he's always got articles about new breaches. It's becoming rampant. And it seems like the thing to do if you're a company to avoid any liability, you know, this is a little bit off topic here, but is just to go and blame some APT, you know, Advanced Persistent Threat Group, you know, from North Korea, and say it was the APT. We couldn't do anything about it, and you're off scot-free.
Yeah, that always gets me when you have these calls after a big breach like Equifax. You have these experts go on TV or the radio or whatever, and they go, well, you know, there's nothing you can do if someone's gonna, you know, come after you. You're always gonna get hacked. And all we can do is mitigate some issues. Now, you know, when you're basically surrendering right from the beginning. And what these people don't realize is there's a million things that can be done. Now, could you hold off like a foreign state power you know, maybe not from a dedicated assault where they come at you with, you know, spies and electronic attacks. But the Equifax hack, okay, which isn't directly credit card related, but I think this just points to a systemic problem in our whole ecosystem of cybersecurity. The Equifax system gets hacked from the internet. Now, of course, they blamed on some patch that hadn't been, I don't know, it was like a couple months old that the patch was not applied. But what no one looks at, well, I mean, no one says in the media. Now, of course, the media is not very tech savvy. But so it's a little bit excusable, I guess. But when they talk to these experts, no one brings up the fact that, okay, so they didn't apply this patch. So their system is hackable. Okay, fine. So the system gets hacked. But that's a web front end machine. That is a web server on the edge of the internet. If you hack a web server with proper application and network security, so not just application security in terms of securing your application, I mean a proper design, you should not have access that they had to all of the data that was able to be pulled. So that tells me that either, worst case scenario, the database was on the web server, which would be quite funny, or the database was just in an extremely accessible location, and not just any database, the database that had all of the goods. So we have these companies that run around, you know, acting like, you know, big security companies, right? Because Equifax, even though they're not a security company, they're protecting people's, you know, credit scores and things like that, right? It's a major company for determining people's credit viability. So you would think they would be more security focused. And they have this huge flaw, which not only is the web server not patched, but just because you hack a web server, you can actually get every piece of data on X number of users. So the whole application architecture is broke at that point. But no one talks about that. Now, you could argue that they don't talk about it because it's too nuanced, too technical. I think some of these security people they have on the air are just either they don't really know what they're doing or they just don't care enough to talk about it. It's my personal opinion.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot going on. It's definitely poor design. That's the bottom line here. But, I mean, number one, maybe these companies are relying too much on the traditional perimeter security idea. Look, like in the modern age, perimeter security, there's actually just an article that came out in Wired or Dark Reading recently that said that the perimeter is dead. And it really is. You got to adapt and you need to start upping your security game and leveraging, you know, better processes and better techniques to go and actually actively hunt threats. Because when you got a big old target on your back, like some of these big companies do, especially like an Equifax, you know, if you're not actively going out and looking for those things, you're just asking for trouble. They're probably not patching, you know. So in terms of trying to go and perform privilege escalation, you know, if you're not patching your servers and your Active Directory elements, you're going to be screwed. I mean, there's a lot that goes into a tag, as we'll talk about in a minute, but. I totally agree. But
right, and just to stress the point again, you know, the protection against the hack is one problem, but the whole point of web edge or, you know, internet edge or DMZs, the whole security, you know, if you're into the security game, those are considered exposed systems. Those are your most at-risk systems. So you have to plan for them being hacked. So it's not just enough to prevent hacking. You have to plan that they will get compromised, and if they do, they can't. How does a web front end get you every piece of data off a user? It's ridiculous. How can I do? I break into a web server and I can query a database for every single piece of information I want. The database with all of the information, like the stuff that people shouldn't even need to know from your customer perspective, shouldn't even be accessible by that web server. So obviously they didn't care. And like I said, I mean, I don't know all the details, but it would be really funny if the database was running on the web server. I'm sure it wasn't, but it would be, I'd laugh my ass off.
Right. So along those lines, all right, you know, let's talk about who's behind these attacks with the payment cards. Let's talk about that for a bit. And I'm not going to bore everybody with the fine details. You can find links to official reports and the details of this case study on our podcast website once it's up and running, fully operational. But the cybersecurity group FireEye published a report entitled Follow the Money, Dissecting the Operations of the Cybercrime Group FIN6 in April 2016. That's FIN6. FIN, of course, standing for Financial Threat Actor, a derivative of an Advanced Persistent Threat Group. Professional cyber criminals that are out for monetary gain. It's a pretty in-depth technical case study into the inner workings of one of the main threat actors who are responsible for a large number of POS system compromises over the last several years. The report is based on findings gathered through several Mandiant consulting investigations into the hospitality and retail sectors where FIN6 was successful in compromising POS systems and stealing millions upon millions of payment card numbers. So here's the rub. FIN6 normally stumbles onto its targets by way of massive spam campaigns facilitated by the GrabNew malware and similar variants. GrabNew is a credential-stealing backdoor with form-grabbing capabilities and the ability to inject code into specific web pages to mimic a valid login prompt for financial institutions to facilitate banking fraud. But FireEye found that it's often employed by FIN6 in conjunction with the POS malware payloads as well. FIN6 likely didn't write the malware, but traded or purchased rights to it through the complex seedy criminal underworld ecosystem that's out there. So it's completely random, and after stumbling onto a target, the threat actors typically use components of the Metasploit framework to establish persistence. A common hallmark was to use a downloader program to connect to command and control servers to download and execute shellcode using either registry run keys or Windows scheduled tasks to establish persistence with the group's preferred backdoors. And then...
Go ahead.
Oh, you're about to say something there.
I was going to make fun of the Windows scheduling system, but go ahead.
You could do that all day. After FIN6 establishes persistence, they may use public utilities like Windows Credential Editor for privilege escalation and credential harvesting. They've also used Metasploit's PSExec NTDS grab module to obtain a copy of the company's Active Directory database, extract the hashes, and crack them offline at their leisure to obtain domain admin. And that's exactly what's going on, those similar types of vectors with all these companies that are leaving their web servers unpatched and exposed.
Wait a minute. They're getting the directory services from these... Who are they getting this from? These companies have external systems exposed with their directory services ripe for the picking?
Yeah, I'm not personally familiar with the Metasploit module. I'm not a pen tester. I'm not a member of a blue team or a red team or anything like that. But there are modules within there. Like I said, that PSExec NTDS grab module, that if they can get their hands on that file, they can extract the hashes, crack them, and of course, there's also other methods of pass the hash attacks and things like that. Ultimately, they're getting their hands on the Active Directory structure. They're getting the credentials necessary for privilege escalation.
I'm just wondering, is this happening on the inside of the organization or the outside? And if it's the outside, there's major issues here.
Well, in this case with FIN6, it's from the outside. So they make their initial infection.
That's a problem.
They establish a foothold, privilege escalation. Now, aside from the AD information, multiple tools are used to conduct reconnaissance of SQL databases and NetBIOS information. And once they got you mapped out, they begin lateral movement across the network using PSExec and remote command executor tools to leverage the cracked passwords to gain a better foothold in the environment. FIN6 would commonly use the Pink command line utility, which is part of PuTTY, to create SSH tunnels to their C2 servers for routing RDP traffic to their threat actors administration right under the noses of security folks who are too busy spending their workday attending to the company's lost and found box or fixing physical bags readers that broke on the office supplies closet door. Because we're all too familiar with that.
Yeah,
they're all understaffed. And they're all
this sounds like a systemic problem.
Oh, absolutely. Now, through the lateral movement, complete with NetBIOS recon because people still run that crap, the attackers identify POS systems. And at this stage, FIN6 would routinely deploy the Trinity or Framework POS malware using Windows tasks. The malware runs continuously and targets system processes not listed in its accompanying process blacklist in an effort to stay one step ahead of the defenders. That's a key reason why persistent C2 communications are so important, and why modern companies should be using things like, I'm not going to name any specific technologies. That would be improper right now. But, come on, modernize. Get with the game, guys. Anyway, Trinity scans for payment card data signatures and copies to a local file in a subdirectory within the C Windows directory. Exfiltration from the target environment occurs via a script used by FIN6 to iterate a list of compromised POS systems and copy harvested track data files to a numbered log file before erasing the original data files for obfuscation. The log files are compressed into a zip archive, moved to staging systems that are set up to send the stolen data to their C2 servers using an FTP command line utility, which I assume is encrypted. But as final note, FIN6 has also used methods to upload data like file sharing services rather than command control servers. So how do you like them apples?
Well, okay. So wherever these hacks are taking place, they've got to have the worst security. So I'm guessing most of this directory services theft is taking place from, you know, successful phishing attacks, etc. If it were to take place from the internet edge, that would be the most ridiculous thing ever. That would mean that their web servers are running the same Active Directory domain as their internal, which we all know should not be happening. But assuming it's internal, you have user education problems. And of course, then you've got my consistent rant, which Windows is just a horrible security model in general. It's ripe for the picking. NetBIOS is only one problem of it, but just the whole structure of Windows security is a problem. So you've got these low-hanging fruits, which allow users, you can blame the users all you want. You know, don't click this, don't click that. But the fact that you can click something and have your whole area compromised, that says something about Windows. And that says something about the state of things. Now, what is the next step here? What are these companies, you know, does anyone care? Do they care? Does anything happen because of these hacks?
Well, the reality is companies who are not EMB compliant are the biggest threats. The attack methods previously described are not changing drastically. And as more merchants slowly warm up to chip readers, researchers note the threat actors are just becoming more focused on places like the gas stations who do not have a mandate to move to them until 2020. Why the EMV consortium gave gas stations so long to wait without risk of repercussion makes no sense to me, but don't expect Quick Trip to look out for your payment card security for another year and a half or more.
Hey, Quick Trip, home of the big buddy, the mega buddy, and three hot dogs for, I don't know, $1.50.
Yeah, just pay with cash.
Do they still have the mega buddy? I don't know. Wasn't that 64 ounce?
I think, I don't know. I don't drink that shit anymore.
They do sell meat.
They got good pizzas.
Yeah, they sell ground beef.
In fact, I would say that Quick Trip pizzas rival most of the pizza joints around here. I mean, there's a couple
chains.
Of
chains. Mostly chains.
Yeah,
actually, their pizza is pretty good. If you want to have, you know, pizza made from a factory, it is pretty good. But they have ground beef mongoose. Just saying.
Well, anyway, if you don't think this problem is rampant, rewind the podcast and check the preliminary statistics again. The Home Depot breach in 2014 affected POS systems, which compromised some 56 million credit and debit card numbers. This was actually larger than the 2017 Target breach, which compromised about 40 million payment cards. Ironically, that one was a FIN6 special, and the company had just implemented new FireEye security mechanisms, but no one knew how to properly use them. You know, if that doesn't sound familiar.
Doesn't know how to use the security product, huh?
Yeah, we bring in a contractor, we deploy this cool tool, and we don't know how to use it by the time they leave, and we end up using about 5% of its functionality.
Let's just get real. Aren't companies just looking for some sort of magical box? They want a toaster, they want a refrigerator, they want to put it on their network and just have it secure everything.
And they don't ever want to have to look at it or touch it again. It should just magically do everything for them. No administrative effort whatsoever.
Right. In these people's minds, it would be great to have one flat layer 2 network, probably like CenturyLink. They would stick some sort of security appliance in the middle of this flat network, okay? The security toaster. And then magically, it would stop all external attacks, all internal attacks. It would stop phishing. It would stop everything. It would stop fish hooking.
And they could sleep easy. Monkeys. Herpes monkeys would stop
the herpes monkeys, but not in Florida. So the thing is, this is what they want. This is the unicorn of, guess what? It's not the unicorn of engineers like you and I, okay? Because engineers usually don't believe in unicorns, although unicorns are cool. This is the unicorn of, surprise, surprise, management. They want to be able to check off a box and say, I have security. What did you do in 2018? Security. How'd you do it? Security toaster. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, is there not some kind of blame to be spread along to some of the salespeople from some of these companies that go and market security technologies? They come in, they talk to the CIO, and they say, like, look, like, we did an assessment on your network. You guys are screwed unless you buy our latest thing. And maybe that CIO, well, typically they're a little bit smarter than the average management guy. So, you know, I know some pretty smart CIOs. But, hey, look, like, typically, like, some of these management folks, they get really freaked out. And they think, hey, as long as we take the sales guy's word for it and we buy this technology, we're safe. Because to them, it's, you know, from A to Z, all it is buying the product and then telling your engineers, your administrators, get it in there. And then life is good, right? That's what they think.
Right. Yeah, they get to go to sleep and rest easy, waiting for the next payback from the vendor that they just bought their stuff from. Maybe they got a trip to Aspen. Maybe they're going to Europe. Who knows? Interesting story. I was once talking to a vendor, and we were in between managers, and I was evaluating multiple carriers. And one specific carrier said to me, it was a guy-gal team, and the guy was a little bit older, and the gal was a little bit younger. And the guy was saying, hey, if you renew with us, it could be quite lucrative for the both of us. And he said this several times, and the gal who was younger kept like thinking, oh man, what did I just walk into? And I just kept repeating the same thing, you know, we're gonna do the evaluation and do this right. But I can see a lot of managers who, you know, aren't really that technical. Matter of fact, they probably studied business and ended up as a IT manager. They don't really know what's going on. And they've got to make their boss happy, right? And how do you make bosses happy? A spreadsheet with a checkbox.
That's right. And nothing feels better than being presented with a spreadsheet full of checkboxes.
Correct. And then that spreadsheet feeds a graphic of a pie chart.
That's right. They use Excel formulas to paint pretty aesthetic pictures, green, orange, yellow, that show lines increasing the security posture.
Correct. Yes. Yes.
Which somehow they can quantify from that spreadsheet.
Right. So what happens is business manager walks into IT department day one, says, I've got no metrics on you guys. This is a problem. So he doesn't notice that that's his problem. He considers not having metrics the problem. Okay, now, don't get me wrong. I think metrics are a good thing. But he has no concept of, you know, actual state of security, life cycle replacement, any number of other actual problems that are like the rubber hits the road problems. He's got, I don't have metrics problems because that's a management problem. See, that's his problem because that's all he cares about. He's like an MBA fresh out of school, right?
TPS reports.
Right. Did you get the TPS reports? So that's the issue. It's a layer. It's the top layers coming down, trying to understand how they keep their job. How do they justify their job? And that's checkboxes and graphics.
Yeah, we don't want to understand all the complicated stuff because then we know we're idiots. So give us the spreadsheet full of checkboxes and we know we're good. Don't tell me anything more.
I think it's more sinister than that. Maybe not sinister, maybe cynical. Because I don't know if they have complete ill intent. I don't know their intent, but I think it's a little more cynical. I think it's more about if I don't understand it, I'm actually not to blame. So the less they know, the better.
Ignorance is bliss.
Correct.
So to close our little payment card segment here, In the immortal words of Andy Rooney, if dogs could talk, it would take a lot of the fun out of owning one.
I think that pretty much sums it up. I think that pretty much sums it up. And I think that music tells us that we are out of time. However, I'd like to thank my guest co-host, Mongoose. This is Muskrat. For the maiden voyage, first episode of Packets and Bolts, the podcast about technology, life, philosophy, everything in between. And remember, keep packing those bolts. Until next time.
Signing off.
See ya.
Real goat.